This podcast is brought to you by Tailwind Nutrition. And sitting on the other end of this line is ultra runner Mark Lance. And Mark's been on this podcast before, Inside the Head of an Ultra Runner. That was a fun podcast. We've got him scheduled for a full podcast coming up with all of his nuggets from a recent Western States 1936 finish. And we'd like to welcome Mark Lance to talk a little bit about Tailwind. Mark?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Don. I'm glad to be back. The race went pretty good. Obviously not one of my my better times, but nonetheless a solid performance. And I decided this year to try something entirely new. Most of the time I'm old school, and I like my water and my S-caps. But you were kind enough to provide me some Tailwind last year before Western States, and I used it for part of the race and felt like it was a pretty good match, but I wasn't able to really prove it to myself. And this time around, I experimented with it a little bit more on some training runs and decided to give it a go for the entire race this time. And I was very satisfied. I had a good solid run, and a lot of that, of course, is your stomach. You know how it is. If you get the stomach going south, then your race kind of either slows up or disintegrates in front of your eyes, and this time it didn't. Everything was very solid, so it worked out extremely well.
Let me ask you a couple questions, Mark. What consistency did you use? Two scoops per bottle, or did you have your own recipe? What did you do?
I did what they suggested. It seemed to work out real good for me. I assumed from their directions that I was getting about 200 calories a bottle. Mm-hmm. And between that and S-caps and an occasional gel, everything worked out just great.
So you still took the S-caps. Did you have to reduce your S-cap intake compared to, say, your other sports drinks that we've used on the trail?
Oh, yeah, significantly. In fact, the S-caps, really the only time I was using S-caps is between bottles. I'd run out of one bottle, and I was carrying one bottle of Tailwind, and the other bottle was water. Mm-hmm. So I could pour it over my head if I wanted to, wash my eyes out. And so when I got done with the Tailwind, I was drinking water. And when I started drinking the water, then I would take an S-cap so that I never lost that salt balance in my system.
Good. And how about food intake? Did you find that the calories carried you pretty well and it sat well with your stomach? Because a lot of these questions we ask on this, and the purpose of the podcast is, as you know and listeners know, is how do we become better runners? If this product works, can it work for me? So can you just give me a little bit about calorie intake?
Yeah, I guess the best way to put it is I've typically been trying to keep my calorie intake between 200 and 300 calories an hour. And mm-hmm. that seems to keep me sharp enough and everything functioning just fine. The key to me, though, has always been the salts. Not so much the sugar and all that, but the salts. And I had never had anything to worry about with this product. I would mix in a little bit of a gel once an hour, but no solid food. I used no solid food. Although I did make a mistake. I'll tell you about that later, but no solid food.
Awesome. Yep. Mark, go ahead, Mark.
No, that's it.
Oh, fantastic. You know, we appreciate you coming. I look forward to your full podcast coming up as we discuss some of the nuances of ultra running and things that you've learned as you've put yourself. This was your ninth Western States, correct?
Yeah, ninth one. If I can get to the start line healthy next year, that'll be number 10. Yep.
Awesome. And posted a screaming time of 17:19 as a personal best on that course, which puts you, you've been a top 10 finisher and an invite back to Western States in the past. So certainly a man that knows what he's talking about. We appreciate you coming on. So go to tailwindnutrition.com. Check out some of these products that Mark is talking about, the different flavors, raspberry now with caffeine, and the naked flavor, one of my favorites, lemon, and the mandarin orange. That's at tailwindnutrition.com. This podcast also brought to you by Foot Kinetics, the makers of Rungoo, and that's R-U-N-G-O-O. There's a lot of things on the trail that can slow you down. You could get lost, you could trip, but you don't need chafage. You don't need blisters. That's trail carnage. do what we've done, spread this run goo liberally on all the parts that could potentially slow you down. Under the arms, between the thighs, on your feet, wherever you may need it. Go to footkinetics.com and check out the special TRN offer, which is this. No shipping. It doesn't matter where you live. They will ship it to you. In addition, they're providing a fantastic contest right now. It's the Carnage Contest. Show your worst carnage, and Vito over at Foot Kinetics will send you your very own care package if you win the contest. He'll look at the most gruesome, the most goriest, the most qualified carnage and send that recipient a free bottle of what I like to call trail love, some run goo. So go to footkinetics.com or visit the banner on the Trail Runner Nation website and enter the contest. Hashtag run goo on Twitter or at We Are Nation. Send that photo in and let's see your carnage.
Are we recording?
Faith, give me a little 1-2.
1-2.
1-3-4-5-6. Check.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War.
Today we're... Scott, I forget. If I start, then I do the intro, and you had the intro, so I just jumped in.
Oh,
I didn't even know. Or maybe you don't know.
I can do it.
Well, let's get to this hot podcast. Let's go.
Today we have Alex Varner on the hook. And
hey, guys.
Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Good, how are you guys?
We want to welcome Alex back. He's been on in the past. Scott, that's my part of the interview that I knew that I was solid for, so you can go ahead.
Thanks for preparing that, Don.
Yeah, no problem.
Alex Varner is one of the elite members of the Nike Ultra Trail team. Did I get that right?
I think so. I don't know if what they're calling us specifically ultra or not, but that's kind of what they were pushing us towards.
I would say
what we're all leaning towards.
If they were to ask my opinion, I would say ultra needs to be in the title.
And I'm going to definitely say elite. And Nike's probably just where you start.
You have to have Nike in there somewhere. Hot off a amazing Western States 100 trail race. He finished seventh at his first 100-mile distance. And this is an amazing accomplishment and kind of sets us up for the topic today. But before we get to what the topic is, I want to also say that not only was this his first 100-mile race, but just a few months prior to that, in April, was his first 50-mile race. So Alex has jumped from being just a screaming fast, shorter distance up to trail, you know, up to marathon distance, screaming fast guy, all of a sudden decided, let's try these longer distances, and has accelerated at these. So today's topic is... we're going to go through the differences between the different distances and kind of talk about how the training is different, how the racing is different, what kind of things to expect when you're graduating to that longer distance. Is that what the topic is, Don?
Well, yeah. I didn't know about the training piece, but you know that's a good twist, because the assignment was, hey, there's a difference between a 5K and a 10K, and there's a difference between a half marathon and a marathon, and certainly between 50 miles and 100 miles. So the assignment was for each one of us. And by the way, Sally was on the assignment too, but she was doing some filming or something, because she's a big-time star now as F10 from Western States and a movie star, Southern California. So she's getting her beauty rest right now. we've learned that sometimes you have to sleep to look like she does. So, Scott, no hope for you and I.
The assignment I better go back to bed.
The assignment was to come in with two differences that we see each, and to keep them secret from one another. And so, with the exception of this, I did see Sally's list. You know, we were supposed to keep them secret, but she told me that her number one thing was that you get to put a different sticker on the back of your car as you graduate from one race to the next.
So we have a virtual Sally with us today.
A virtual Sally, and that's one of her submissions all the way through. So, Alex, how's that sound for a topic? And we're happy to have you with us.
Sounds great, guys. Glad to be here.
Okay, well, let's just jump off. You know, and I'll take the lead here on the 5K to 10K piece, and you know, a 5K. People go couch to 5K. 5K seems to be the introduction to racing. And when you show up to a 5K, you can have any type of athlete. Up front, you know, the experienced runner from college, Division I, this is his or her wheelhouse. Love to spin fast and go hard. And you can have people in the back that may have the bib upside down, sideways. You get all kinds of variety of newbie, beginning, green people stuff. It's the intro race of all intro races. So that's what I see as a 5K-er. I see just a variety of runners and a welcome mat to running. So there's my first submission for 5 to 10K.
Well, I'll jump in and I'll say, you know, my first experience with even hearing about a 10K was one of the biggest 10Ks in the country, which is the Boulder, mm-hmm. which Don, that place is in Boulder.
Thank you.
But I had some. I lived in the Boulder area for a while, and that's where my wife is from. And I'd heard about this Boulder, and a bunch of relatives and friends in that area had always run the Boulder, and they had put in huge training hours. And I thought, 10K, that is a long, long way. And the training that they put in to run this 10K was something beyond what I was committed to do. And so I think that there is quite a distance, a difference between the 5K and the 10K. I think it takes a larger commitment from that intro runner.
Awesome. Alex?
Yeah, for me, the 5K versus the 10K is, the 5K hurts the whole time.
Yeah.
And the 10K is kind of a little more meted effort, but it's uncomfortable basically the whole time. But the 5K, if you're not hurting 800 meters into it, you're not running well, or you're not going to have a good one. But that comes more from a track background. But that was kind of one of the bigger differences I've found in it.
Yeah, Alex, I'm gonna support you on that, because we were just having a discussion not too long ago about you know, 5K versus long trail stuff, and that's what I had thought too. A 5K is just constant 100% all out effort, and could be painful just from the gun to the finish. And at least in long ultras, you can stop at the banquet table and eat a little bit and then push on, and walking is a strategy, and walking is failure in a 5K if you're, you know, really, really pushing for your personal goal.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Hey, Alex, I have a question for Alex,
yeah.
Because, you know, this is not in my wheelhouse. I have run one 5K and I've run one 10K, which happened to be the Boulder.
That qualifies you, Scott. In fact, ran a 5K within the 10K, so you can't really count that.
and as I was telling Don earlier, I've done a lot of training 5Ks and 10Ks.
That's good.
Yeah.
But you know, that point that you made, Alex, is very interesting to me. I never thought of that a 5K is pain from when the gun goes off until you break that tape. Would you consider a 5K a sprint?
Almost. Not in the sense that the 800 or the 1500 is, obviously. But it's a pretty all-out effort basically the entire time.
So
it's not long enough where you can kind of, you know, I mean, this kind of goes into my second difference, but, you know, in the 5K, it's from the gun, you're going. The 10K, you have maybe a mile and a half to kind of ease into it and get the feel of things. But in the 5K, you know, if you get in the wrong group to start with, or if you get boxed in on the track or on the roads, if you get separated from the group you're trying to run with, it can be really hard to make up that difference, because you can spend a lot of energy kind of jumping between groups, and once you get up to where you need to be, you're too spent to finish the race there. So it's something you kind of have to be aware of from the gun. If you're trying to run with a certain, you know, at a certain pace or with a certain group of people, there's not a lot of room for error in it.
Right. Early positioning is important, where you can make up for that in a longer distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my site was that your second distance?
Yeah. That was basically it, kind of the 10K, just a little bit more room for error.
Okay, now Alex, this one really won't make sense to you because you're still, you know, blazing at the 10K distance, but for some people might consider now some different gear, like maybe a water bottle or something along the way. So I think there could be a different selection of equipment on a 5K. Certainly, you know, less is better. But I think there could be for mid pack or backpack, people might start thinking about what am I going to carry? How am I going to execute this race differently? So I think the distance doubles and the equipment changes a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as you're saying, you know, if you're kind of doing one of the couch 10K programs, or if it's your first 10K, it can, you know, it can be 40, 50 minutes, or even 60. You know, if you're kind of feeling out the distance for the first time, and that, you know, an hour run is a long time to be out there, especially if it's, you know, on a road and it's warm. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to think about kind of changing up your gear a little bit.
Do you take in water at any aid stations at a 10K distance or not?
Generally not. Okay. I have, I think at Marin 10K this year, which was over Memorial Day, Jorge and I, Devin Yanko has her bakery along the course. Mm-hmm. And she was handing out ginger cookies, and so Jorge and I each ate a cookie. And then I needed to take water after that, but
just to swallow.
Exactly. We kind of spent the next mile kind of choking a little bit back to the aid station at 3 miles. The water station at 3 miles. But if it's warm, I'll take water. I imagine a lot of the folks at, you know, Peachtree this past weekend took in some fluids in Atlanta. Mm. It's certainly not uncommon for somebody to grab a water bottle.
Okay. So let's, are we ready? Have we exhausted that? Well, did you have more, Scott?
I had one thing. The thing about the 5K and the 10K that I have experienced with the Boulder Boulder, and I think with many even of the local races, is it's very different than these other races in that the sheer mass of people participate in them is exciting. I just remembered I have run two 10Ks, and one was a turkey trot on Thanksgiving, and that was that one and the Boulder Boulder was crazy exciting because there were 20,000-30,000 people running these races. Mm. And it's just like, that was just really fun.
Yeah.
It's electric.
Well, I think a good addition. All right. So half marathon to a full marathon. And I'll lead as I did in the past. I think this starts to measure up to some distance running. I think a full marathon is a different animal. I think, you know, a 13.1 with some moderate training and you can get by. But when you start talking marathon distance, now there's a whole new structure out there called the wall. You start to run through your own metabolic capacity where you need to intake something or you're going to crash. I think it becomes a whole new dynamic and obstacle. And so I'm going to say the difference between those distances is you need to get over a wall or around a wall or avoid it somehow.
Freeman, that was mine.
That was very similar to mine as well.
Perfect.
That's where the wall is introduced, is in the marathon, right?
There's a reason I took the lead here.
And where is the wall on a marathon? Is it 20 or 21? 20, right?
I think 20 is generally what people say.
Yeah. So then let's talk about that wall. Alex, how do you avoid that wall? What's your strategy? What's your wall strategy?
That would be. I think fueling is probably one of the more important things in the full marathon. Kind of the half you can skate by and not taking maybe HL or even none in a half marathon. I think I've run maybe one half marathon in my life as an actual. Well, I don't think I've ever raced one, but just running, you know, having run that distance, you know, the marathon is much, you know, it's kind of an endurance event as opposed to a race, mm-hmm. per se. And you definitely have to be aware of what your body can handle much more so than in the half marathon. The fastest guys are running in 2 hours, you know, the kind of middle of the, you know, other people are doing it 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. And that's a long time to be out there. And you definitely have a lot more concerns with your body and your fueling and your metabolism when you're out for that long.
For a second, I was pretty happy because I thought you were referring to the half marathon, the fast guys doing it. And I thought, oh, you know, I'm a fast guy. And then I quickly realized that the 4 or 5 hour, you were referring to marathon. I was a bit rude as I've jumped in and I've taken the lead and taken the low hanging fruit. So I'm going to step aside for the second point. Who wants to chime in on point two from half marathon to full marathon? All right. See, then there's a reason I picked the low hanging fruit.
I'll defer to Alex.
Okay.
Mine, you know, again, it was, you know, kind of the race versus the endurance event, I guess. You know, if the first point was the kind of getting through the wall via fueling, the second one being just the endurance event, it's, it takes a lot more commitment to go into a marathon, I think. Not that a half marathon is anything to scoff at. But the marathon is definitely, you know, it's kind of that mythical runner question, at least, you know, in post-collegiate, if you're running, you know, on road, shorter stuff, everybody, they find out you're a runner and they go, oh, have you run a marathon? Mm. And that's kind of the measuring stick.
It is for
runners.
Yeah. It is kind of the notch on the, I don't know, what is the notch? Notch on the bedpost, notch on the gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's the yeah.
Don, you're a Marine. You would say notch on a gun, but the rest of the world says notch on the bedpost.
All right. Well, the notch on the old bedpost is hanging that hook, the marathon hook, right? That's the yeah. difference. People, you've run a marathon.
Yeah, exactly. I got that question and, you know, I would say no for a while because I ran my first marathon 3 years ago and they would just kind of go, oh, what do you do then?
And it doesn't even matter your time, right? It's just that you've done the marathon. It's like, you have done a marathon. And if they said, a non-runner might be more impressed with a 4 hour marathon than a 3 hour marathon. It's like, wow, you were out there a long time. You're really a good runner. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, it's they kind of write you off unless you've done that.
Yeah, my friend did a 6 hour marathon, much tougher than you.
There's a willingness to suffer for that long. It's admirable.
So, Scott, do you have another one on the marathon? Because if not, I've got another one.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think that that one of the differences between a half marathon and a marathon is a mental side. Mm-hmm. A marathon is kind of the pinnacle of an endurance event. There's not too many people in the world that have ever run a marathon. And so I think that is one of the things to get over mentally is can I really do what these other people, these amazing athletes have done and run a marathon? The other thing is I think I think Alex referred to this, it takes a much greater commitment in your training to get to that marathon. And then I'm going to pipe in for Virtual Sally. Sally would say that the half marathon and marathon are where the stickers come in.
What stickers?
The car stickers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't think there's very many 5K and 10K stickers, but there are 13.1 stickers.
Oh boy, you know, you show up to soccer practice, there are a number of 13.1s on the back of the SUVs or 26.2s.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually just had another one that kind of goes to your wall, but cramping is much more prevalent in the full marathon.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I don't know any friends that have cramped in the half marathon, yet the full can reduce. I mean, Boston this year, I had to stop and stretch with 400 meters to go.
Well, yeah, you know, you hang out with some fast people because there are some half marathoners that actually cramp. Let me, Alex, build on yours because that was my next point. Is that the full marathon, there's a whole host of new problems. There's chafing, there's blisters, there's all kinds of things that happen to the 4 to 6 hour people that never would really, your body doesn't break down and you can make it through that 13.1, but you start to, I mean, glide becomes part of your vocabulary or run goo, a product that we enjoy over here. Things that help you survive the elements. So, yeah, Scott.
Hey, along that same line of hydration, and I'm going to defer this to you two guys because I've never run a half marathon. In a half marathon, do you need to worry about electrolytes at all? I guess that goes back to the cramping issue. And I would assume in the marathon distance, you have to be more concerned about intake of electrolytes.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, the half you definitely want to have some electrolytes, but the full, I'm much more concerned about taking kind of gels, or even some people even do bars at that distance, just because you need a little bit something a little bit more solid to get you through. In the half, yeah, if they've got, you know, I'll definitely stop at a water table or two on the half. And if they've got, you know, sports drink or goo or whatever, you know, the race directors decide to have out there, chances are I'll take some of that as well, but won't generally take kind of a gel. I'll rely on my breakfast to get me through.
All right, gentlemen, are we ready to jump from a full marathon to 50 miles? Because
I want to interject before you make that big jump.
Yes, sir.
I want to throw a question out to both of you. Is there a difference in training and racing between a marathon and a 50K? Or would you consider them the training program and the racing strategy and everything similar or identical?
Alex, you have the option. I'm ready to go. You can point the finger to me or you can answer.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, hey, I think 26.2 and 30.31 distance, they're so close. It really depends on the terrain and the profile. Many marathons are flat. You can roll through them and train differently. And there are many 50Ks that if you select properly, can be nice mountain races. And so there's a completely different type of training with hill climbing, ascending, and descent. So I think that's the major distance, not the length, but the terrain for those two races.
I fully agree with that.
All right.
Well, and I was going to say, excuse me, this is kind of where when we graduate.
Back. I'm afraid this could be on this end. I can see.
I think it's on your end.
Nope, I got you.
Alex.
I got you.
Oh, hello. Okay.
Alex?
There we go.
Good. We're back. Fantastic.
Ready? Action.
Go.
I was going to say that I think this is a key cutoff distance. When you go from a marathon to a 50K and beyond, I think the majority of 50K and beyond are traditionally trail runs. And I think that's where we start getting into a big difference with the hills, with being maybe the footwear, being a little bit better with navigation and proprioception on the trail. I think that's one difference as we graduate into the 50K and beyond.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually, I wrote that exact same thing. I just wrote road versus trail. The 50 mile is kind of 50, you know. 50K and beyond is definitely at least more enjoyable on the trails. I don't know that I want to spend 50 miles on roads.
No, and there are some road long races. Well, how about 100 miles or 24-hour track race, Alex? You know, around a track. You're a track guy, so you've been around the track a few times. Could you imagine spending a 24-hour day on a track?
I could imagine it, but it would be a pretty long, bad day.
I agree.
I have some friends who did they do a summer solstice 24-hour out in San Francisco, and it's a 1 mile loop around Chrissy Field, and that just does not sound appealing to me at all.
Well, you know, I want to throw in a shout out to Corey Reese. He's a Trail Runner Nation member out in Utah, and he got a bee under his bonnet this past weekend and decided to go to the track by himself and run 100 miles.
Wow.
Around the track. And
400 laps.
Yeah, that is nuts.
It's got, so we have a notch in the bedpost, a bee in the bonnet. What is this, 1890? Okay, let's go, gentlemen, from 26.2 to 50 miles. All of a sudden, the everything changes, in my opinion, as this turns into a, I think there's a bigger difference between 13.1, you know, the 13.1 to the full marathon. There is a night and day difference between 26 and 50 miles. Pacing becomes a huge, huge, and strategy and everything changes. I shouldn't take the first one. I throw it out there.
You already did.
No, I guess I did. But pacing wasn't even on my list, so that doesn't count. That was a virtual Sally comment. Now, out to you guys.
Go ahead, Alex.
Russell, coming up.
I think the, you know, one of the bigger differences is, as when I was heading into Lake Sonoma, Matt Lay put it so succinctly, where he said 50 miles is a long way to run somebody else's race. With the marathon,
oh, yeah.
You know, you kind of, it's almost important to find kind of a pack to go with. If you're trying to run, you know, a personal best or, you know, a faster time, I think it's important, you know, they have those pace groups for a reason, and that's running somebody else's race, but you kind of have to do it because if you were running your own race, you know, presumably you'd be running a little bit slower. So if you're trying to get, you know, get your time down, you know, you have to kind of go out of your comfort zone there. Whereas 50 miles is a long, long ways to do something that someone else is doing that you're not entirely comfortable with. And so I think that kind of, you know, that fits a little bit with the pacing comment you said, but it's definitely something where you need to be aware of what is in your comfort zone, because that's an all-day event. And if you start out, you know, the first 20, 30 miles are run outside of your kind of, you know, your comfort area, those last 20, 30 miles can take a long time.
You know, Alex, I'm curious. You just ran your first 50 miler in April. Did you experience what surprises did you encounter that you weren't expecting?
Just kind of the length of the whole thing. I mean, you know, before that I'd run 50K and, you know, getting 30 miles, 31 miles, you know, 3-4 hours into the race, just kind of looking at your watch and going, okay, every step from here is unknown. You know, it might bring, cramps or, you know, nausea or what have you, but really not knowing what was coming around any given kind of, literal and figurative corner, kind of taxed my mind a little bit more than I thought it would. You know, you kind of, you go up the hill and you're like, all right, am I going to be able to run this? Am I going to be reduced to walking? The fueling became more important. You know, 38 miles in, I was, you know, very tired and kind of ready to be done, and you still have another 12, and then it's just, it's longer than you anticipate jumping up from that distance. Like the marathon.
I really like that comment, a long way to run somebody else's race. That's a good mantra. That's a good thing to, you know, from this podcast or wherever you pick it up, to keep with you in your running pouch, because you cannot go out there and just hang with a group or with a runner or push yourself. You know, you could say a long way to run somebody else's race. That could be very individualized too. You could be by yourself without any influence of other people and run somebody else's race. You need to run your race. And, yeah. You know, even Corey Reese out there running around that track 400 times needed to run his race, because if he set false expectations and was running someone else's race, he wasn't going to make it. So we've got to be honest with ourselves as we run and take on our and assess our personal, you know, fitness level and our fatigue at the time and all the other elements we're supposed to be dialed into and watching. You need to be running your race. That's a terrific one.
I have one.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think at a 50-mile distance is where real food comes in. I remember the first time I ran a 50-miler, I almost couldn't stomach another gel. I wasn't planning on eating any real food. I just thought, I'll just keep eating gels, because I always did well with gels in training up to that 50-mile distance. And after 30 miles, I was having a tough time not gagging up gel. It was just too sweet and I just couldn't stomach. And I think that's where I learned on my first 50 miler. It's a good idea to start eating some real food early on.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think that's true too.
How about you, Alex? Where do you start taking real food in a race?
I started taking real food at 50K. I started doing that just cause, you know, I run in the first couple of races I did, there was a little bit more climbing involved, and so I definitely wanted to have something a little more substantial in my stomach when those later stages of the race come along. So I started eating bars, you know, just a bar and a half the first 10 or 12 miles of 50Ks, and that carried right over into the 50 mile, where I just, instead of eating, you know, bar and a half, I had two bars in that first bit of the race, just to kind of get a base down, and then while you can stomach, and then inevitably, is, you know, as you guys know, and most people who've run the longer stuff knows, your stomach can't handle that later on, and that's when you switch to goos and hope that those bars kind of stuck around long enough to give you some benefit.
You know, you guys up front that run up front, and I'm going to call back to Way to Cool, where you and Chris Vargo, you can see from the finish line a part of the trail that parallels the finish. So you can look out across the field and see the runners coming in, and then they take a hard right-hand turn and race down another straightaway. But you two were neck and neck. I mean, stride for stride, and you watch that and you think, my goodness, all those decisions of when do I take water, a bathroom break, how long I stayed at an aid station, all of that stuff really boils down to stride for stride at the end. So every decision along the way is important for you guys up front. Let me share with you. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just saying, it is. It's a little scary to think that way, but it is.
Let me share with you the luxury of being behind you, all right? Because if you've got a little problem that needs, but you've got a rock in your shoe, well, my goodness, you should stop and take that out. You know, if you see somebody that you know that you need to talk to and catch up a little bit, then you stop and talk to them. So, you know, running has a completely different feel when you're in the back. Scott?
You know, I was going to say, the thing that just popped into my mind is, I think at a 50-mile distance, you see more people carrying cameras and stopping and taking pictures of the view and of them running in nature. And I think that that's one of the differences also.
Alex has never seen...
There's more Facebook posts that happen during a 50-mile run than maybe a marathon.
From the runners themselves?
Yes, from the runners.
Posting. Has a runner ever posted on Facebook during a race? That's what I want to know.
I don't think anybody's posted a Facebook post on a 5K, though.
No.
We got one of the 12K at Beta Breakers this year. Matt Lay took a picture of our centipede during the race.
Okay. Here's one of the larger differences that I see in the marathon to 50-miler, and that's the aid station worker themselves. Because at a marathon, they're holding out a cup, and they're yelling, sport drink, or water, and they're yelling that, letting you know what they have in their hand, and they don't expect anything but a arm to rush by and grab, and they're hoping not to get wet as you come by. And then people just toss the cup on the ground, they throw it on the ground, and it's just a whoosh through there now, or a swoosh, since we're on a Nike team, to the team Nike member. Now, at a 50-mile, aid station workers, well, they expect a little interaction. You know, if you came through and you were running through a marathon aid station, they would probably pull your bib for next year. They would say, that person lacks the social skills and culture to be out here. We're expected to stop a little bit and exchange information and become Facebook friends later. Talk. We need to get information from the aid station workers, like how many more hills and how long to the next spot, and all these things are important. So, I think the food, the people, everything's different through an aid station from a marathon to 50 mile.
I'd agree with that. That wasn't one that had come to mind, but you know, when you say it that way, it's very true. The marathon folks are just sitting there with their arms out, and the 50-milers are looking for a chat.
Well, now 50-mile aid station and beyond, their arms are out too, but they want a hug. They want some interaction time.
they've often been out there longer than you have.
True, that's right. They deserve a hug.
Yeah. So I'm gonna move us quickly to the one that I've been looking forward to, and that is the distance between the 50-miler and the 100-miler. And I'm gonna start this off because I'm talking and you aren't.
Yeah.
I want to say
I'll jump in otherwise, right, Scott?
the biggest difference, in my opinion, and I've heard this from, maybe this is folklore, or maybe we can credit the person that said this, but the difference between a 50-miler and a 100-miler is far beyond 50 miles. So going 100 miles versus 50 miles is more difficult than just running another 50 miles. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Scott, before we dive into that point, let's give kudos where they're well deserved to Alex, who just went and has taken on one of the premier 100-mile races, which involves more than 100 miles. It has plenty of pressure of not only hill profiles but also competition, stepping into some amazing athletes. Go ahead, Scott.
I want to say that I don't think Alex prepared for Western States well enough because someone didn't tell him that he should be running slower. I mean, he finished sub 16 hours and finished seventh place at his first 100 miler. I think that Alex should have been told that you're not supposed to run that pace for 100 miles.
So let's talk about that. Alex, what mental preparation, how did you take your mind and your body and position yourself for a successful outcome?
It wasn't terribly different from some of the training I'd done when I was trying to run fast, 5K, 10K marathon a couple years ago. I probably put in the most solid training block I put in, where I put in 500-plus-mile weeks with a lot of quality. But other than that, it wasn't anything too different what I'd done. In retrospect, I've taken from the race and looking at what some of the guys around me did. I'm definitely going to incorporate some longer long runs and some kind of longer back-to-back sessions. But in terms of just pure mileage and workouts, it wasn't too different from kind of the 5K, 10K stuff that I've been used to. It was a little bit longer and slower, but, I was doing intervals on the track and shorter hill repeats and a couple of longer hill repeats, but nothing really kind of out of my wheelhouse that I was comfortable with. And that's, I think, going into a race that I was, very uncomfortable thinking about. I probably should have done some uncomfortable training to go with that. But part of getting to the start line for me was going through kind of the motions that I knew, and I knew where I could get my fitness with that. And I thought that was, that was adequate, and it certainly proved to be, but there's a lot of changes I can make going forward.
Well, that's exciting to see. What's in store for Alex Varner as you move forward and get a feel for that distance, as it was a complete new distance for you. Did you have access, or did you tap into other 100-mile runners that are out there and look at their training schedules and plans and map that? Or did you completely say, I'm 100% confident in with who I am and what I am, and I'm going to go out there and forge my own path?
Kind of a little bit of a mixture of both. Mill Valley, we've got, Bright Rivers has done a couple 100-milers. Dylan Bowman's run Western States a couple of times. Jorge Maravilla has done it as well. And those guys were really invaluable training resources, kind of in talking about what are some of the issues you face, what are, listening to what they were doing in training. But more often than not, I would kind of hear what they were doing in training, and I wasn't doing anything like that. Dylan, for example, would say, I've got to go run a couple of 2x30-minute hard intervals. And for me, that was just like, oh, that sounds awful. I don't want to do that. And I would find myself running 3-minute hill repeats or, 1200s on the track. And because that's what I knew. And it was very different. But I think, everybody's a little different in terms of what they're able to take in preparation. As I said before, a lot of it was for me being able to mentally wrap my head around it was the same with the training. I needed to kind of know what I was doing and be comfortable with what I was doing in training because I knew that where that would get me. And I figured that would carry me through the race, even if it wasn't quite ideal.
As you finish up a marathon and you take your last steps, you go, I couldn't do another marathon right now. And I mean, this is me speaking. And you finish up Lake Sonoma 50 mile, and it's like you come into that one and you go, geez, that's a long race, and the profile looks a lot like, say, Western States. Lots of climbing, and there could be heat out there. All of those things can happen there at Lake Sonoma. And you came in at that point. This year in April, did you think to yourself at that point, as you're running that last stretch, Western States, I'd have to do another one of these. Did you ever have that thought in your mind?
No, I didn't realize I had a ticket to Western States.
Oh, okay. Well,
I knew I was in fourth, but I didn't realize. I just naivete, call it what you will. Didn't realize that Carr already had a spot, and didn't realize that Sage was, you know, had already said, I don't want to run hundreds, and that kicked the spot down to me. And so I got across the finish line. I was kind of pleased. I thought, oh, great, I finished fourth, you know, competitive 50-miler, but now I don't have to worry about making the decision on Western States. And then, you know, a buddy comes up to me and says, you got a spot. And that was kind of, I wasn't obviously not disappointed, but just a little like, oh, well, I guess I do have a decision to make. So that last bit, I wasn't thinking about this. 100 miles is a lot further than this. I was thinking about, thank God it's over. So yeah, Scott, that was a nice surprise.
I can't hear Scott.
There we go. You know, it's been said, you know, on 100 milers that, you know, the first 50 miles is physical and the last 50 miles is mental. I want to know from a front pack 7th place finisher of Western States, how much of that 100 miler was mental for you?
Western States, I mean, you know, obviously I have no other 100 milers to compare it to, but it really got mental about mile 65. I went into it with the goal of feeling comfortable and relaxed through 50K, through 40 miles, and came even through, you know, out of the canyons. I was, you know, tired coming out of the canyons, but I felt pretty good. It got a little rough coming out of Volcano Canyon and up Bath Road, kind of into Forest Hill. But at that point, that's what I was, you know, I was expecting that. I would run, you know, 10, 15 miles further than I ever had before. So I was anticipating that kind of being the case. But, you know, when I picked up Vargo and he and I headed down to Cal Street and getting 2 or 3 miles into running with Vargo and realizing, great, I've got 15 miles to run with him and then another 20 with Magda. That was kind of the real kind of kick mentally, was I really had to get my head around, all right, you will get there. It's going to happen. And that, for me, that was the biggest thing. There wasn't any doubt that I was going to finish. It was simply, I'm never going to get to the finish line. I'm going to be like Sisyphus rolling up this hill, and I'm never going to get there.
You know, one of the other differences between 50 mile and 100 mile for most people is that's where the whole pacer thing comes in. And you just mentioned that you had a couple really good pacers at Western States. How important at your first 100 mile race were those pacers?
Oh, they were hugely important. I picked them. I knew, you know, they've haven't run 100 milers, but they've run 50 miles. And so they know kind of the dark places those longer miles can take you. And I realized I wanted somebody who knew, who would know and be able to kind of commiserate with what I was dealing with and hopefully be able to help me kind of work out of it. It worked great. You know, Vargo and I worked together well. We didn't say a whole lot, but I don't think I needed a whole lot of talking at that time. You know, it was kind of jokes here and there, you know, random snippets of conversation that they talked about in the crew car and, you know, that sort of thing. And then I picked Magda for the last 20 because I knew she would kick my butt into gear. She would, you know, she's completely comfortable with talking during, you know, keeping talking, even if I'm not. And I picked her for that biggest reason. That was one of the biggest reasons I picked her, because I know she'd be there, kind of give me words of encouragement, because that was, you know, that just completely fits her personality. And that was huge for me getting towards the end, where I was, you know, audibly cursing downhills and just being a small child in most general aspects of life.
could we say that there's more crying in a 100 miler than a 50 miler?
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think that whole pacer thing, I have two comments on pacers. Number one is that breaking down a race, say 100 mile race, and running the first 50 or 60 or whatever, wherever you pick that first pacer up, for me becomes a race of, Don, get yourself to your pacer and bring yourself to that pacer in decent shape, that you owe it to your pacer not to be an anchor but more of a runner. So take care of yourself and don't bury yourself, and show up with something that he or she can work with. And it also becomes a mental piece. I'm just running That's my race, and the rest, I'm going to run, you know, 15 or 17 with Vargo, and you know, I'm going to have three races all in one, and it becomes a okay new race, new day, clean slate when I pick up a pacer, and that becomes becomes fun. You get to hash the day out a little bit and say, yeah, this was happening there, and so I really enjoy picking pacers up.
Yeah, it was a big boost getting them, you know, getting to run with both of them.
But my second comment on pacers is very valuable for a pacer. You want to learn about running 100 miles, become a pacer and work through some of the problems and help that runner. You have full cognitive skill set at that point. Your runner does not. You do. You get to observe what's happening and what problems are happening and look for solution. It is a good place to learn about running long distances. So
it certainly is. Vargo had said beforehand, he goes, you know, people ask him, you want to run 100 miles? And he goes, well, let's see how Alex feels about it. And then we'll make that decision.
Well, that's a question. Have you talked to Chris? Is he intrigued by the long distance now?
I think he is. I haven't had much of a chance to pick his brain about it yet. But I think, you know, judging by kind of how well things went Saturday, he's, you know, he's certainly just as, if not more talented than I am. I think, you know, he'd be, he's thinking about it.
You know, it can, it's a bit contagious, you know, watching people do that and being around it. It makes you want to run. That's for sure. What do you think the strongest part of your race is? If you looked at yourself and you tried to you know, characterize you, do you feel that you're a better flatlander, a hill climber, a descender? What's the strongest part of your race game?
I like climbing. I don't know that it's necessarily my strongest suit, but it's kind of the bit of the races I like the most. You know, I found on the shorter stuff that I've done better on the hillier course, the kind of the more it suited my strengths. And you know, Western definitely kind of solidified that. I don't think I did enough downhill training for Western. I did a couple of sessions, but judging by how my knees felt afterwards, I didn't do nearly enough. Whereas, you know, beyond mile 60, every uphill I was relishing. I was, you know, I was excited to get to run uphill, and you know, again, that speaks a lot to the Western course itself as well. I'm not the only person who was out there wishing that, but you know, a cool, you know, I was sitting there and at Lake Sonoma, you know, Lake Sonoma, my biggest gripe with the course was the climbs weren't long enough.
Well,
you know, all these undulations, and it was, you know, it's hard to get in the rhythm, and I like the climbs. That's why I'm particularly looking forward to North Face in December, because I know those trails, but they're all prolonged climbs. And I benefit when you can get in a rhythm and just start picking people off and start rolling up a hill at your own pace, at your own rhythm for 20, 30, 40 minutes.
Wow. You know, Alex, you may have found, you know, your place in running. You're fast already doing shorter road stuff. And then all of a sudden you find hill profiles and you go, wow, this is what I like. I can really sink my teeth into that. And you usually do well at what you like, and you usually like it because you do well at it. And so,
yeah, exactly.
you may have discovered the new place for Alex Varner. That's good.
We'll find out.
You know, along that same lines, I have a question to throw out to the group, and that is, once you graduate to these longer distances, 50 mile, 100 mile, do you continue to run the shorter distances? And I'm going to go to Alex, because Alex was screaming fast, collegiate, high school, 5K, 10K guy. Do you still have, after running a 50 miler and a 100 miler, do you still have the desire to go and be competitive at those shorter distances?
Oh, absolutely. I think if anything, it's there more than it was to prove to be greedy and try to run both ends of the spectrum and try to be good at both ends of the spectrum. I think, you know, I think it's really important. A lot of things, some of the ultra guys, not that they don't know, but that they place less emphasis on, is, you know, for example, we asked Dylan Bowman to be part of our centipede at Beta Breakers, and he was a little worried that he wouldn't be able to run that pace. And for me, it was surprising because I thought, well, shoot, like, you know, I want to be at a place in my running where 5:15, 5:20 pace feels doable for a long time, because that makes 7, 8, 9 minute pace feel so much easier, relatively speaking. And for me, you know, that comes from that kind of that feeling, that fitness comes from running for and training for and running the shorter stuff. And so I'm excited to run, you know, our cross country season this fall out here. I don't think I have any major races on the docket except for North Face 50. I've got a wedding the same weekend as, you know, U.S. 50K Trail Championship, so can't do that. You know, I'll probably run some local 50Ks as longer training runs. But other than that, I'm excited to run cross country.
Do you think that having these longer distances under your belt will make you a better shorter distance runner?
I'm not sure about that. I think it'll make me knowledgeable. I mean, mentally, I think it will help. But physically, that remains to be seen. I'm a little worried that it kind of saps some of the speed, and that I might have to work a little bit harder to get that back. But we'll find out. I'm looking forward to it.
What's next on the docket when you start to look for other long races? And looking forward, do you have something that's on your list on your bucket list for 100 milers?
I haven't even gotten there yet.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I can understand that. There is a number of high profile races that are probably that will be attractive to you.
Yeah, I'm you know, hearing the talk leading into Hard Rock and you know, the European stuff. There's a lot of fun places to go with it.
How was it running for Team Nike? Give us a little look in the inside of this juggernaut, Team Nike Elite Trail. We don't know. We know the words. We just don't know the order of the words of the title of Nike.
I think officially we're Nike Trail Elite, but it's great. I mean, it's we're all in different. A lot of us are in different places. You know, Vargo and Alicia in Arizona, Laney and Gelfi and Mario are in Oregon. I'm in Northern California. Sally's in SoCal. Claire Peterson's out here as well with me in Northern California. But despite the fact that we're relatively far apart, it still feels like a pretty cohesive team. And I think that was, I don't know if they were going for that or not, you know, when they kind of picked who they wanted on the team or accepted us on there. But I think that was kind of fostered at Lake Sonoma, where we had basically the entire guys team there. And Claire and Sally were there as well. And everybody was there, I guess, now that I think about it. And being able to be with all those folks in one place really kind of brought us together and, you know, helped us realize, all right, these are people I can lean on for advice, for support. And, you know, the folks up at, you know, the kind of our manager, Pat, and a couple other of the folks involved with the team, you know, we had a couple guys down for Lake Sonoma and a couple guys down for Western. And that, having them there, having kind of the Nike corporate presence, has also been fantastic. You know, it's more support than we could have hoped for. You know, Western on Saturday or on Friday before the race, they were like, come over to the house, you know, hang out with us for a while. We'll do, you know, take some photos, kind of any last minute things you guys want, you know, heading into the race. You know, we get an email from Pat saying, you know, what are you guys looking for in terms of uniforms? We've never done this before. You know, we've got the kind of the Nike kits that we've got, but, you know, do you want pockets in the shorts? Do you want anything in the singlets? And that's how, like, the holes in the singlets came out, was David emailed on the back and said, you know, hey, I'd love some holes in the singlets. I'm trying to get as cool as I can. And we all kind of agreed, you know, we want pockets in the shorts. And so they sent us down, you know, race shorts with pockets sewn into them. And so they're really open and really kind of attentive to getting feedback. You know, as soon as we were done on the track on Saturday night, you know, David and I and Sally as well, they took our shoes and they said, we're taking pictures of the shoes. And, you know, they had two of the designers for the Wild Horse and the Kiger there. And those guys were looking at, you know, how did the shoes perform? What happened to them physically? You know, what did we think about them? Did the feel change? And so they're really kind of looking to see exactly what it's all about, because they were kind of designing not blind, but with less kind of knowledge. And then, you know, you look at the Pegasus, that's a refined shoe. They've got 30 plus years of kind of sports science going into that shoe, whereas the Wild Horse and the Kyger are on, you know, iterations 1 and 2. And so they're really looking at kind of, you know, getting that. And that really makes us feel close to them, because we can tell that our input performances are valued.
Which shoe do you run in, Alex?
I run in mostly the Kyger. I like the Wild Horse as well, but I like the feel, the faster, more responsive feel of the Kyger.
You know what? I don't want to say impresses me or surprised me. You know, Nike went out and they didn't look at the top list of who's running the fastest in the last X number of years for people in the ultra running community. It's like they went out and picked, you know, high performing collegiate athletes and brought them in, formed a team and said, all right, team, we're going to go out and assault the trail and we're going to take over and just perform at our highest level. And whoever did that selection process, they were very, very talented, very good talent scouts. They knew how to pick a team.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, it's funny, I've talked with, you know, guys on Pearl and North Face and, you know, Innovate and what have you, and Hoka and what have you, and a lot, you know, kind of the one thing that they were most impressed with was the way Nike went about getting into the team scene, because they very easily could have gone out and said, you know, Sage, Rob, Timmy, here's, you know, we'll double your salary or we'll double whatever you're getting from these guys. We're Nike. We can come in and do that. And they kind of, I think they entered into the market in a very wise way, as you said, where they kind of picked lesser known entities that they had confidence and faith in that they could run well, and they said, all right, this is how we're going to do this, and we'll use this to build, we'll build from here, and hopefully we can kind of take it and make it a little bit more homegrown, which I think is embodies the whole ultra running scene a little bit. You know, it's much more of a kind of a make your own name thing, as opposed to, you know, you're not running these distances in college. You get into it after college. And so it was much more of a grassroots approach to it, which we all liked as well. Cause we came together and, you know, we were like, who the heck is this guy? And who's, you know, I never heard of this guy. And it was, you know, it was kind of fun seeing, oh, these, you know, they picked us well. We're all performing pretty well.
You have to be, you know, over 50 to get this reference. Back to the old Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid movie, and they were getting chased by the posse, whoever was chasing them, and they started the guys that were out in front getting chased. They looked back and they said, "Who are these guys?" Trying to figure out who's able to chase them this well, and I've got to think that's the rest of the ultra running community going, "Who are these guys? how come they came from nowhere and running so fast?"
Yeah, it's fun, you know. It's kind of, you know, we've all had a lot of success early on in our careers, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Alex, we were excited to watch you finish and watch the 100-mile success that you had out there, and we're rooting for you. Got to know you a little bit at Way to Cool and podcasted with you there and learned that you're dynamic not only on the trail but on the mic and met your folks, and they're nice people too. And so you're certainly, you know, a trail runner, right for the culture, right for the people, and exciting to watch, and you're giving back by, you know, joining us here today. And so we're big fans of Alex Varner and look forward to future success. And Alex, congratulations on an amazing, amazing race at Western States this year. M7 finished. He'll be back next year as an option, earning his spot into 2015 at an amazing 15:53 finish. That was spectacular.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. It's the two times I've been on with you guys, it's been a fantastic, fantastic time.
We'd also like to, you know, Sally was going to be here. She just texted in. She said, "Sorry, guys." And she, well, so we know that she had some good contributions to make. Scott just stepped out because he has a meeting that he's supposed to be in, that he's probably leading the way. And so for my two missing partners here, I'd like to say, go out and run, Moss.